Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Rocket Mortgage. Confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Rob Schneider and Dana Gould. With Gina Grad on news, Walt Bryan on sound effects, and we'll go digging for Huell's Jewels. And now, his rendition of the national anthem would be a 20-minute tirade about how nothing else is spangled. Seriously, what the fuck does spangled mean anyway? Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, we get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks to great sponsors like Hims, H-I-M-S. Go to forhims.com/Adam. Get your first month for just $5. Lots of good stuff there. And, of course, Tommy John. We're always wearing our Tommy John around here. Just the best in undergarments and now beyond. TommyJohn.com. Rob Schneider back. Yeah.
Thank you.
On regular rotation.
I'm loving it. I'm enjoying it. Thank you.
Listen, we're loving having you. The audience is loving having you. I love your wealth of knowledge that you drop upon us. And
my career's in the toilet. I have nothing to do but look shit up.
You're not letting me finish. His career's in the toilet.
He
has nothing to do but look shit up all day and then come over here and bore our audience with it. But tell me if you think maybe this is sort of, I'm going to get existential and a little heavy and a little whatever, but do you guys have those sort of quiet moments where you're looking, put the pan flute away, Rob, I'm talking.
Sorry.
By the way, if you ever get into you're going to square off with a dude at a bar and you hear that. And you see the guy slowly taking his shoes off, apologize, buy him a drink. Evacuate immediately. Get him a Sapporo tall boy and apologize to whatever you did to his lady friend.
Exactly. Whenever there's a guy too calm and you're about to fight, you know you're in trouble.
And if you hear that flute, it just means you're going to get an ass kicking. I've seen every episode of Kung Fu, and that's what happened right before. He's like, Chinaman, we don't like your kind here.
You know, I worked with David Carradine before he passed away. God rest his soul. And he told me, we were only allowed 2.5 minutes of fighting. And he told me he was on, and I don't mind saying this because, you know, I think he was pretty open about it. He was on acid for that series.
Wow.
He would take acid and do that show.
That had to
You know.
It was a crazy show for those who don't really remember it. He was playing an Asian man.
And totally buying, like a half-breed, basically.
I guess, yeah, and I don't know.
Can
what
we
they,
use that term now? By the way, is that like okay?
If you're quoting the movie.
I was yelled at by a mom in my son's YMCA Hollywood basketball league.
You shouldn't. You didn't call somebody a half breed, did you?
Not to their face. No, I said I was doing a comedy bit, You know, Rob, you must have gotten into this before. I think my wife is dealing with it now over at the school, which is we have this job where we talk into this mic without a script
right.
for hours a week.
Right.
Hours
yeah,
and
exactly.
hours
a lot
a week.
Of time to fill.
And many things that you discuss will be torn from the pages of your own life.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
it's not all going to be Rob Schneider takes us down a retrospective of Fatty Arbuckle. It's not, that's going to be about 80% of what the content, but there'll be 20%.
There's another 20%.
Things with your kids,
yeah.
things with your wife, things with the school. And
yes.
if people grab those things.
Right. It's the worst thing.
And then pass them along to the family member, to the wife, to the school administrator,
yes.
out of context.
That's the worst thing.
Feelings shall be hurt.
What's even worse? Taking me out of context is taking in context.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I really did say that. That's what I meant. You got me. You
right.
know, that's even worse.
Can I go now?
Yeah.
I mean,
famously, my and the people who do this thing under the umbrella of I just thought you should know. Mm-hmm. Those are wicked people who need to kill themselves. And I mean it.
I
kill yourself would be a much better society. The principal at the school or the teacher at the school
yeah.
or my sister and my nephews when I explained one time on the radio many years ago that I have three male nephews and they're half German. They were born in Germany. They moved to Topanga Canyon. And I was basically explaining, you know, when people are like, hey, what about you? And what about your ancestors? And what about slavery? And I'm like, well, my dad grew up in South Philly. They didn't own a house. They didn't own a donkey. They didn't own people. They were just poor, destitute people who came here from Italy. They didn't had nothing, you know? Yeah, but what about slavery? Well, that's not me. That's
right.
not my family. They didn't own shit. And then I'd say, look, I got German nephews. Should they? How much of the Holocaust should they be responsible
yeah.
for? Because that took place well after slavery, and they were born in Germany. So, how much is of that is their responsibility?
That was the thing I thought about with Ben Affleck. First of all, like, I mean, the fact that like. He did a show on PBS where they said like they looked back and then he said, you know what, the fact that in my heritage they own slaves, can we not, let's just like, I didn't do the show to like potentially expose myself as my heredity, and there's racism in there, whatever, as if that could be passed on like in some genetic trait or something, you know, it's like but they acquiesced to that acts and said, okay, we're going to take it out. And then it came out anyway, and it was like worse than ever.
It was worse.
Like,
the cover up is always worse than the thing.
But I do think, like, I don't think you can take him down for that. You know, besides what, you know, it's not, it's, and it's part of the historical thing. Mm. That's the thing about, like,
well,
you know,
just to put a button on it, somebody then reported back to my sister that I called my nephews Nazis, and she was very upset. Somebody who felt she needed to know.
Right.
The tattletale traits.
This thing they don't know. This thing you don't know. It's like you already ate the hot dog, and someone's got to tap you on the shoulder a week later and go, you know, there was a cockroach leg in that thing. It's like, I just thought you wanted to know. It's like, no, I don't want to know. I didn't need to know. Nobody need to know. And thank you for spinning this in this horrible negative way.
I will say that what happens is I think.
But sorry, Ben Affleck. Sorry.
So what happens is I think there are people who go all day without even trying to form a joke. So the idea that they can understand a joke or interpret it in some in the context that they can find the humor in it or look for it, it's one of those things that I find a truism with people is that everybody can be more or less honest about like whether they're a decent cook or whether they they're a decent tennis player. They'll tell you if they can play racquetball or not, you know, if they're good at it. However, something to do with humor, it comes to the core of how they feel about themselves and human intelligence. So if they don't think something's funny or whatever, it's not funny. And they have to, and if other people find it funny, they get offended by it and feel like they must destroy it. In other words,
well, that's so true. Because when that's such a good point. Like, oh, I can't cook for shit, or I can't do this. No one would ever say about themselves, I have no sense of humor.
Right.
Yeah.
No, Brian, no.
It serves them not. It's like saying, I don't want, there's a lot of blowjobs I don't like.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing. There's no,
wow.
I don't know. Maybe that's an analogy doesn't work, but
no.
I was trying. But the point is, they do feel it. So they feel like it's almost like that's why, because, you know, I've been shit on so much over the critics because I do think that, like, if they don't find it funny, they feel like they have to destroy it. Mm. You know, I remember, like, you know, God rest his soul, but the Roger Ebert was seeing one of my movies, and it was murdering in Chicago. Because, like, you know, the Disney was telling me, like, this thing killed harder than anything we've ever seen kill ever. And then, and Roger Ebert was in there. And when he did his review, which, of course, destroyed it, he never once admitted that he was in a room full of, like, 800 people or 600 people, and they were just dying laughing. So I find it to be, you know.
Yes, and one of the – this will dovetail nicely with the very first Acme review I ever got. And, of course, Roger Shales, the
coveted.
Just if you think you've gotten bad reviews, I would present Roger Shales' review of The Man Show. Which I'll share with you.
Tom Shales.
They're both Shales.
That's right.
They are melding into one.
They're turning into one.
There can only be one.
One out of work lesbian trucker. They're turning into one. I will share that, or someone will share that with you. But so the very first review I ever got, I was a construction worker and stuff, you know, was in the LA Weekly. It was at the Acme Theater. And I remember after doing the show that night, I said, well, we knew the LA Weekly reviewer was there. And I remember saying, I don't know what they're going to say. I've never been reviewed, but I can tell you this. This theater was full and everyone was laughing their ass off. Yeah. So it can only be so bad. Mm-hmm. And then they gave us a horrible review. And I said the exact same thing Rob just said, which is at some point you need to, whether it's a restaurant or whatever, when you're saying this is the worst food ever served, if the place is packed, there's a line going down the street, and everyone is enjoying their spaghetti, you need to say that other dumb people around me seem to enjoy what was on the screen or the stage.
That's at least a sense of fairness. But then you're assuming, when you go into show business, you have this false assumption that there's anything to do with fairness. It isn't. Just ask any woman who turns 35 or 40 in this business what happens. It's like, did you have a good time? Okay, do you have your ticket back in the bus to go back to Ohio? Did you enjoy yourself? Did you save some of the money?
We'll have to ask Eugene in a few years.
Do you have money for the therapy? But like, it does. The idea that there's fairness is just not true. And but you would assume that there would be. But like, for the critics who aren't really doing it and don't risk themselves, that's what, like, John Cleese. I think we talked last time. John Cleese talked about critics. He said, critics, don't even ignore them. You know? Don't even give them that, you know.
And the tough part about a critic, and I guess we feel this way with many facets of life, if we're honest about it, if you can do the, all right, just pretend they were never born or you were never born and put your head down and keep walking with purpose. And then somebody taps on your shoulder and you go, did you hear the great, great words that Ebert said about you, or did you hear and you'll stop and go, oh, let me see it, and now you're a hypocrite.
Now you're in. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Now you're in for the bad.
Well, yeah. There is, like, the criticism really is more about the critic than it is about the work. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, I do think all criticism, it's just like anybody who's doing a statistical analysis of something. They're going to find what they want to find from their own, how they skew it.
Well, it's weird that when I was reading the Tom Shales review of The Man Show, I was like, oh, this guy's gay for me bad. Like, I remember, I didn't know he was gay. I didn't know Tom Shales was gay at that time, but it turned out, like, as I was reading it, it felt like he was into me, even though it was very abusive.
One of the reviews for Deuce Bigelow that I remember that was the greatest, because the movie was obviously a hit and it just did really well, you know, but, like, there was this one reviewer that said, and like an idiot, of course, I read it looking for the good things. At that time, I used to read it. The guy said, the eye wanders anywhere on the screen where Rob Schneider isn't. And I said, whoa, that's creative. Yeah. You know, I respect that guy.
Wow. Gina, read Rob that Tom Shales, because you're going to feel better about every Deuce Bigelow review you've ever gotten.
This is from July 29th, 1999. I'm just going to start from the top. It's a time of abundance. It's a time of emptiness. It's a time of diversity. It's a time of sameness. Jesus. It's a time of knowledge. It's a time of being really dumb and proud of it. Yes, perhaps paraphrasing the opening of Tale of Two Cities.
Still at this point, you don't know which way it's going to go.
Don't know.
By Charles Dickens is too lofty a way to get into a column about how barren the airwaves and cable waves are. But then Dickens is long dead and cannot protest. If he were alive and turned on his TV set, he would be too appalled to speak and probably drop right dead again. How sad that with all
magic
those
box with images.
How about using a classic, you know, author from one of the greatest English authors to shit on you?
Yeah,
he didn't even have any say in it.
He hasn't even begun. He's warming up.
Get your
seatbelt on. This is the part before you get your ass kicked where the guy's just cracking his knuckles and handing a beer to his buddy. This is that part. Yeah. We haven't got to it yet.
But he's first, a list of authors who would have hated this show.
He's not throwing haymakers yet.
Yeah. How sad with all those hours and all those channels to fill, cable keeps coming up, not with innovative and adventurous fare, but with more and more frivolous time wasters.
Ooh.
Cable's goal is apparently to lower the common denominator beneath anything the broadcast networks were able to do during their four decades of dominance.
Ooh.
Among the latest case in point, The Man Show.
Oh.
A hapless reactionary fun fest.
Oh,
fun fest.
Right,
that airs Wednesday nights on cable's Comedy Central.
Plug.
This is a network that made a name for itself with South Park, a crudely drawn and even more crudely written cartoon
still
about
running.
Foul-mouthed
still
tots
running.
And talking feces. Yes, really.
Wow.
The Man Show stoops low, too, presenting itself as an alleged tonic for the excessive feminization of pop culture. It's a kind of talk variety half hour co-hosted amateurishly by like-minded clods, Adam Carolla and Jimmy Kimmel.
Who are 20 years later still doing very well for themselves.
They bumble through a mishmash of skits that try to be funny by ripping off, among others, David Letterman and MTV's mad maverick Tom Green. There's a hint of wit to what Letterman and Green do, but none to what Carolla and Kimmel perpetrate on their pathetic.
He's even shitting on Letterman.
Wait, Letterman has a hint of wit?
Sort of a poker game without
cards. A hint
cards
of a 30-year career.
They think they're extolling the primal pleasures of being male by referring to women as broads and belching on camera. But they just flail, fizzle, and flop horribly. This is not so much a show as a car crash. Carolla already has one disreputable series on the air. It's MTV's Loveline, a late-night talk show in which viewers phone in for advice about their sexual problems. A smugly preening Dr.
That's
Drew
right.
attempts to answer the questions while Carolla croaks out Neanderthalian gags.
What I do now.
The whole thing is a wallowing exercise in communal embarrassment.
See, now, he got two of my shows in one review.
Yeah.
So not so here's the Tom Shales man. He's supposed to review The Man Show.
Yeah.
He then bleeds off into Loveline. He gets Dr. Drew.
Yeah.
And now you feel like, all right, well, I co-host the show with Jimmy, so he's going to get 50% of the slings and arrows, and then I'm going to get, but let's see what Tom does here.
But then here's the thing, like, I get shit on by, like, other movies that I had nothing to do with.
Right.
It's like, hey, I'm not in that one, and I say, yeah, but this, you know, you got to go back to blah, 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 to see Rob Schneider to see this kind of garbage, and it's like, oh, God.
The whole thing is a wallowing exercise in communal embarrassment that makes the Jerry Springer Show look like a Harvard seminar.
Oh.
Lacking showmanship, taste, cleverness, class, and even simple telegenic visual appearance, i.e., he's a creep, Carolla is perhaps the perfect symbol for the new age of anybody can be on TV. Whoa.
Wow.
That is crueler than necessary.
Yeah, that's actually quite...
You're reviewing a comedy show, and you're saying that one of the guys isn't attractive enough to do comedy. It's kind of a weird... But that's why I knew he was gay for me.
Yeah, you know what? The physical, where they go after you is a bit much.
Yeah, that was rude. The Man Show as... let's see. Oh, perhaps he is ideally suited to co-host The Man Show, as he seems to represent the species at some previous preliterate evolutionary stage.
Jay Leno said this to me. You know, everybody thinks they got it worse. You know, everybody thinks I got it worse. You know, this guy gets it worse. You know, Tom Cruise, you know, Tom Cruise thinks I get it the worst than anybody. No, everybody gets their same fair as shit. Everybody gets shit on. You get shit on. You know, it's the shit stick goes around. You get hit by the shit stick, and you got hit by the shit stick. You know?
Yeah, I got hit by the shit
I don't worry
stick.
About the shit stick. I worry about the holder.
Let's see. Oh, he looks like he's reached the third or fourth plateau in poor Larry Talbot's transformation into
more?
A werewolf.
He's still focused on my physicality.
Reading. This is very rude. In the Wolfman pictures, Carolla and Kimmel call their program a joyous celebration of chauvinism, presumably male chauvinism, but there's really nothing joyous about it. Desperate would have been a more apt adjective. On the premiere, one tape segment featured Kimmel out on the street asking female passersby to have sex with him. The surprise is no one clobbered him over the head or called a cop. In addition to chauvinism, the show celebrates such supposedly man-pleasing topics as flatulence, voyeurism, beer guzzling, and belching.
Those are all man-pleasing topics.
Those are all man puppets. Yeah.
Supposedly.
This is a guy.
This guy's the biggest reviewer in the nation at the time. So.
This is a guy masturbating and took forever to come. That's my opinion.
That's what it was. All right. So there you go.
I'll say, like, this famous director, I won't name him, but he did say this to me about, you know, this is, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman. This may, you know, he said, like, the reason why they, and I'm not taking away from him as a great actor, but the reason why critics adore him is because they look like him.
Oh, yeah, wow.
That's what the very famous director.
Yeah, and he's, you know, first role, sort of struggling with his sexuality, with a little beer gunt going on there. I think, like, that's
a guy they can root for. Yeah, you know,
Rob hit the nail on the head. We said the criticism is often more about the critic than it is about the work. Yeah. Like, you guys saw that documentary by Jamie Kennedy, Heckler.
Oh, I loved it.
It was mostly about the criticism has gone so far over the edge of not talking about the work and being more about, you know, reflecting your own prowess or superiority or whatever it is. Yeah.
Well, there is some valid criticism. I do think so. But I do think it's like there's also some baseball being played all over the place. It's like, you know, you can go see a softball game or, you know, a 8-year-old's play. But like at the very high end of it, there are some very valid good criticism. I just don't find it. It shouldn't affect the work. You know, Andy Warhol said a very interesting thing about it. He said, while others are deciding, I'm paraphrasing, but while others are deciding whether you're making art or not, make more art. Mm. You know, in other words, you can't get so wrapped up in it, but you can. And you can get wrapped up in the praise, too. Yeah. And that could fuck up your head. Thankfully, that's never fucked up my head.
I've never had the wrong sheet here.
The transition was, for me, is like entertainment over the years has shifted. Okay. And if we go back to like what is the basis of entertainment? Like, you talk about the base level. He was like objecting, and Mr. Shales was objecting to the what you were using as what was entertaining to you. Now, if we go back and back, there seem to be certain elements that I've found historically over entertainment. Used to be one of the biggies is suffering. That is a big one. And I still think that exists today with modern football. But you have blood. So there was like, that was the big one, that big,
gladiator stuff.
But that was the thing about it. And so it'd be different. But there was such levels of it where it kind of bottomed out. But the apex of it seemed to be like the Greeks, but then the Romans took it to just a whole other area. Mm. And some of the stuff, first of all, the Egyptians had interesting parties. Let's work our way up there. Like the Christians, by the way, had them eaten by lions. There was like, I'm sure they tried out other animals. The Romans tried. There was like, well, you know, bears. But nah, you know what? For these Christians, lions.
Yeah.
That was a specific animal they chose.
An alligator would seem to be good, but everyone knows that reptiles never do what you want them to do when you want them to do it, and then do the opposite of you want when you don't want them to do it.
Schedule.
Anyone's ever had a snake has done the thing where, like, I lower the mouse down into the thing, and then they go, look at him. He's going to eat the
Tom Green.
And you stand there forever, and you just stare at it and stare at it and stare at it, and nothing happens. And at some point, you come back in the room, and the snake is sleeping, and the mouse is, like, cuddling up with it. You go, what? Come on, be a snake.
Fatal Attraction or whatever it was, like, Fatal, whatever. It was on, like, one of the animal shows or History Channel, and it was basically these people who had these dangerous animals who killed them eventually.
Right.
And so you knew going in it was how it was going to end. And like this one lady was sleeping with like a python, whatever, and it was sleeping. I was sleeping really long ways next to me, which means it's measuring you to eat you.
Right.
You know, it's like these idiot people.
But then, so if you threw a Christian to a gator, the gator would not eat the Christian. But when you left the stadium or the Coliseum amphitheater, that night, you'd come up the next morning, and Christian, you'd just be a pair of sandals on the thing. But they never do it in front of you.
When the ticket buyers are there.
Like, for instance, like in the Roman times, we'll go back to Greek, but in the Roman times, you had like if you know how you were like Donald Trump and like Clinton had deferments, right? To avoid Vietnam. Well, basically, in ancient Rome, the upper class were given like deferments or exemptions from the many punishments, such as, this is a good one, ad bestias.
What is that?
Eaten by beasts.
Oh,
so,
wow.
If you were, and crucifixion, of course, which is like, you know, very hacky that point.
Feels like an intro.
And labor camps.
Oh, there's an intro.
But if you were the lower class.
A history lesson.
Well, Michelangelo was commissioned to do the Sistine Chapel. They also had notes.
With Rob Schneider.
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't know we had a history.
If you were the lower class, and thank you, I appreciate it. It's been a long time since I've had any intro. And if you were convicted of, like, say, a crime. Okay, and you were a lower class person in ancient Rome. You were now suddenly in show business. But here's the thing. One performance.
Yeah, you were one nighter.
Grand opening.
One night only.
Yes, you would be getting killed by a bear or trampled by beasts. And but here's the thing about it. After a while, people say, you know what? Okay, Christians getting eaten by lions. That's kind of boring at this point, really. I mean, we've seen that for weeks now.
Kind of been there, done that.
Yeah, and it was free. And by the way, the seating was interesting, too, because like the rich guys could sit. They would get like the 40-yard line, you know.
Right.
And then the slaves actually got better seats than the women.
Wow.
Yeah.
The similar women, times.
It's like, hey, honey, enjoy the show. Okay, yeah, just that.
Oh, down there at the slaves.
And the line for the ladies' room probably went around the Coliseum.
Yeah. So, but they would find other things that they would have to look at and to elevate this level of
entertainment.
Yes, you have to, because people are bored by this point. They want the MMA or the, you know. So what they would do is that actually the Coliseum, they would actually, which about 70,000 people can get there, they would capable of filling it with water.
Yeah, the naval battles.
And they would have action naval battles. But I would also do another thing that the apex of the cruelty, where it said, okay, this is about it, was they would have beautiful slave girls dressed up and everything.
Ring girls.
Yeah, well, they would be on the boats and they're waving as the floats around and everything. And say, oh, that was pretty cool. And then they would drain the water, have the girls come out, and then they would be eaten by the beasts.
Oh.
Wow.
It seems like a waste of a pretty girl.
That was the closer. It's like, you know, it's a good-looking girl, but what else can we do? Well, let's have them eaten by beasts.
Sure.
You know? Somewhere there was a meeting where that happened.
Well, this is kind of like, if you start with devoured by beasts, it's hard to go around.
Yeah,
this
where
is
do you go from there?
Well, this is my Richard Gere Gerbil theorem, which
you
is
you're
banging Cindy Crawford on a regular basis, you got to go gerbil. What, a Raiderette? Oh, who cares? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's
so she was Miss July. Oh.
That's
right,
cute.
Right.
But if you jump over the pond to America back then, the Olmecs was the one who basically supposedly invented soccer. And they would have these incredible games. And really, the only history we have it is from the Spanish, who said like how brutal these games were, because people would have broken limbs, people would die during the games. It was basically they had to like get the ball, a 10-pound ball, and using only their hips and I believe their elbows, and try to get it in this small little area. But how they started the game, instead of the national anthem, they would start the game by sacrificing the team that lost the week before.
Oh,
wow.
High stakes.
Mm-hmm. You did not want to lose, yeah. Usually, like, whoever was taken as slaves, they would make them fight. Believe me.
Right. Some of the slaves would kneel during the anthem, and it would be a big controversy.
Yeah, so knowing you did not want to lose that game. Right. But they would do it with their hips, and it was, you know.
It was weird. I wonder if, two things. It's weird that it's an era where a staph infection would kill you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it seemed weird to engage in these kinds of activities when a small cut and an infection could mean you're going to lose your arm with no anesthetic.
Half the babies died at birth.
Right. But on the other hand, if everyone just average age was 32 and a half, roll
you
the dice.
Ripe old
You're 28. Why not get out there and play a little soccer?
Yeah. Well, you have live like, a little. I think part of the reason, especially like in the Middle Ages and stuff where people didn't live that long, 32 or 35, and there was death in front of their face every day. I think like any form of entertainment, or that's why the church was extremely, you know, it's like, hey, we're going soon, so let's make sure I'm going to the right place.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because around the Middle Ages, it did switch over from like, you know, from slaves to getting killed to where the rich people were actually engaging in some of the games. You know,
well,
if you could afford a horse and a lance, they would do this. It wasn't to the death, though. They weren't stupid. But occasionally somebody would die, which is kind of bring up some of the.
But it is. It's interesting as I don't know the past like Rob. But I go back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s. You go to like Europe or here. All the guys that were out dying in race cars or trying to set speed records on lakes or going in or air speed records by just taking their plane and putting it into a full nosedive, see if they could get to 400 miles an hour, but it would come apart. All gentlemen racers, all rich guys.
Yeah.
So all these guys that were like these 23-year-old rich guy playboys, they were the guys who were burning to death in these Ferraris on these crazy roads. Mm. You know, they'd have these road races, and it'd be the Targa Florio, and it's like it goes through the streets of Italy and then up the hill and around the oak trees and around the big cement markers and stuff. And people just die all the time. But they were the rich guys. Poor people couldn't afford to die.
That's one of the things I wanted to do, the Mila Mila with my old Porsche. And just like,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's because like it sounded fun because you don't drive 1,000 miles in one day. You just drive, you know, a couple hundred miles. You stop, you eat, you drink, you get up the next morning when you want to. You race again, and they have all this closed off, and they, you have to have a 1955 car or
older. Yeah. Right.
And that just sounded fun. But you're right, though. There is like that, just like, you know, not to like crap on the athletes in the Winter Olympics, but since we're here, it's rich white kids, you know, who like, you know, who can afford, you know, mom, I really think I'm good at skiing. Really? That's all you're going to do, darling. You spend the next 2 years.
Every time they show one of those goddamn Chevy truck commercials or whatever, and they got Lindsay Vonn, and they do that thing, I don't know why trucks, but they show the footage of her at three in the full ski onesie on the slope doing the thing, and then there's another picture of her getting out of a Chevy truck, and she's nine, and she's going, I'm like, I didn't even know there was snow.
Right.
I thought it was all cone form.
What a
my stupid loser parents, we didn't have a car that get up to Bear Mountain, they wouldn't buy lift tickets.
Reason why there's not as many African-American baseball players now is because they can't afford the basic equipment.
And it takes a lot of equipment and a lot of room, space.
Somebody's going to rip off that base if you put it in there. And if you don't, you got no game, really. And you have to have a mitt and a ball. Imagine the leap to like skiing, where you have to like, you know, leave your, you have to have like a little place to go and spend weeks there in wherever, it's one of the few places where it still snows.
Mm-hmm. And when they show the biographical information of American athletes, it always says hometown, Vail, Colorado, or someplace.
Yeah. Well, what a coincidence.
Yeah, it's never Glendale or Compton or something like that.
But I think if African American, you know, just like anything, they would, you know, if some inner city kids had a chance to ski every day, they'd be fantastic. You know,
look. First off, I've been doing a lot of thinking on this. Look no further than the three-point competition in the NBA skills and All-Star. That used to be populated with white dudes.
Oh, yeah.
Like short white dudes.
Right. Dude, that was our area.
That was our only area.
Me and Steve Kerr, baby. You know?
With short white dudes that had a good stroke. It is now only black dudes. Yep. Because the deal is given the time and the opportunity, whether it's the 3 points or skiing or hockey or whatever, they will beat us at everything eventually. And that's why, white people, we need to really hunker down and reclaim this country. Those of you who voted for Trump, I'm not finished.
Willie Mays said this to me one time, the great baseball player Willie Mays. He said, like, you know, I didn't know it was a big deal. Steal 40 bases? I would have done that.
Right.
I didn't care. They didn't tell me that was a big thing. Mm-hmm. I would have done more. I would have stole 50, 60. I didn't know it was a thing.
It's a big deal if you're Ron Say. if you're the Penguin, it's a big deal. It's not a big deal if you're Willie Mays.
Yes, I didn't know that was a thing.
I was just watching this, and I was like, I seem to recall the three-point stripe was sort of the jurisdiction of the short white guy.
Yeah.
Many years ago.
And he wouldn't start the game. He'd come in or sometimes
when you needed it, fourth quarter.
Right. Like, you know, we got 2 minutes.
Now, 6'8" brothers are just draining it all day long.
Oh, yeah. LeBron.
The best we can do is Klay Thompson.
LeBron, who can drive, whatever. I mean, like, remember, like, I loved, like, Shaq. Shaq could, if you gave it to him and he was within 2 feet, he would dunk it. Mm-hmm. And then if you got him by the foul line, it was like, you know, hack a Shaq. I mean, that was like, and now that's not necessarily the rule
anymore.
I used
to love Shaq shoot a free throw because it looked like he'd never held a basketball before in his life, which was so weird. Like, he shouldn't look confused. He could have a low percentage, but he shouldn't be confused. It's like, which hand should I use?
He was like the gorillas in 2001. Like, ooh. Like, you didn't know what to do with the thing?
With a stick.
The three-point competition was just nine brothers this year, right?
I think Klay Thompson's half. But yeah, by number seven.
Obama was half, and we still count him as, you know, troublemaker. So, and Klay's great. But in the past, there would have been a couple Steve Kerrs and whatever.
Of course.
Yeah, those dudes in there. So I agree with Rob, which is given the opportunity, given the skis and the ski lift and the pass and all that, given all that stuff, why shouldn't the greatest athletes be the greatest at all endeavors athletically, given the opportunity?
Absolutely, given the opportunity.
Listen, I saw Black Panther. I'm on a roll. These people need the opportunity to ski.
Wakanda forever!
I think we should have a fundraiser starting today.
All right, stifle yourself for 1 second. Dana Gould is here. Rob, I should let people know that, of course, Real Rob, the hilarious series on Netflix.
Thank you.
Binge watch that. Season 2 now available on Netflix. And watch season 1 as well. And also, Las Vegas, Orleans Showroom, Chris Kattan. That is Saturday.
My buddy Chris Kattan.
Coming up this Saturday.
SNL.
Truly one of the nicest guys out there. So go to robschneider.com for any information about dates or anything else you need. I'll tell you about hymns, and we'll do a little more history, and then we'll bring in Dana Gould. Sexual performance issues are more common than you may think. 25% of ED cases are guys under 40. That's a lot of stress out there, man. So, 4hims.com, one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness, and more. No herbal supplements, medical-grade solutions, and generic equivalents of name-brand prescriptions, including the ED pill that starts with a V. You can do that, man. So, no waiting room, no awkward doctors. I think a lot of people are stymied. They don't want to go into the doctor and talk about uncomfortable things, even hair loss, especially stuff like ED. So go to Hims, and you don't have to deal with the glances in the waiting room. Try Hims for a month. You do it today. You just get just $5 while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to the doctor or the pharmacy. So go to Hims. That is 4Hims, 4, F-O-R, 4Hims.com/Adam, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com. Check it out. All right, Rob, let's do one more piece of history here.
Well, I would just say there's a couple of places. I don't know if this qualifies as entertainment, but cruelty. Ferdinand of Naples would have people come over for dinner, and the entertainment was he would take a few of the guests and have them eaten by crocodiles.
So there's your reptile.
To the amusement of other guests or just for his own perverse pleasure?
For his own perverse pleasure, but I also think a few of them would be kind of surprised that they were in the running. But here's a word. You think about what this would mean.
What year do you think that was?
14th century?
Approximately.
No, that was Middle Ages, so I have to be around 15th century.
It took us a while to learn how to be human beings.
It doesn't. We're still working on it, but how about this one?
Yeah.
What does this word do you think mean? Defenestrated. Defenestrated.
I know that
defenestrated.
One.
You know what that is? Defenestrated.
I'll wait for the guesses.
Defenestrated.
Hmm. Defenestrated. They actually had to come up with a term for it, so you know the people were doing this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like disembowel.
Yeah, that's a great one.
So something with your slicing open, taking your guts out.
To defenestrate.
To defenestrate, yes.
I guess you could to cut someone open and pick their bowels out.
Defenestration, defenestrate, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. And the answer is?
Well, you guys want to guess?
I'm done.
I have no clue. Okay. Take your fins
to
off?
To throw something out of a window.
Yes, ooh. To throw someone.
Someone, okay. Out someone or something out of a window.
Oh, how do you know that, Brian?
So many times that it got its own name.
It's one of those absurd words that just, I learned crazy. It just
liked
stuck.
It.
It's like, what a word, defenestrate. Self-defenestration is when you throw yourself out of a window.
Okay.
Yeah. The Icelandic and the Norwegians had a very interesting game. You know, you've heard of cockfights and things like that, mm-hmm. or, you know, people fight. But horse fighting seemed to be the Icelandic would have these... horse fights.
How do you get horses to fight?
Yeah, how do you get
horses?
It was called.
You must put something on them.
It was called the Hestevig. That's when you get the people together, and the Hesteping would be the fighting. They get the horses together and the fighting, and then they're like, you know,
you must put something on them, you know, like a spear or something.
Well, you know what they would do is they would get a mare to kind of get them crazy in an encircled area, and then they would just let them kind of go, and then like so. It's just
you can breed them too. They can go kind of whatever the Mike Vick was of the day. You know, had himself a little horse kennel and was.
Getting
the rowdy ones together, horny rowdy ones.
In summer, when it was only -5 degrees there, you know, that's when it was warm enough to have the fights. That was a Thornby Yarn would go out and say, I got this horse, and they'd have to agree to it. And then, but there's never any actual descriptions of the fight itself, I found, but they just like horse fighting. It's a very, that's a new one for me. It's still going on in Southeast Asia, by the way. There's still some cases.
It's always weird to me. How uptight we are over cockfighting when we literally, Kalen was going to Zanku Chicken this afternoon and he said, what do you want? I said, give me a whole chicken and a whole bunch of that garlic paste.
Yeah.
I get the part where you're freaked out about dogs because everyone has a dog. Like, does anyone have a rooster pet that they really love or grew up with a beloved rooster hasn't eaten chicken in the last 3 days?
But when you eat chicken, though, it's like, you know, you go to buy it, it's like an orange, you know, or is it a chicken breast or strips or whatever, you know, or like a steak, it's more like a, you know, buying a banana or something. But when you go, when somebody comes and like carves, they'll have a leg of lamb sliced up. But if they bring the whole leg over, people get disgusted by that.
Right.
You know, people, we like to be in our culture to be kind of blind to these
removed.
Certain things.
Yeah.
I get it. I look at chickens and cocks is not only edible, but evil as well. I feel like they take your eyes out.
Given the chance.
It's like to me, the MMA fighting, like to me, it's like, and having now women doing it, you know? Imagine it's like these two women beating the shit out of each other.
What's next, roosters?
And we're paying $65, you know? Watching two women beat the shit out of each other, it's almost impossible to come. I mean, you have to like,
nearly impossible.
It's like, you know, it's like, and then like, and then there's Joe Rogan. Forget it. You know,
that was my first thought when Remember Jane Fonda had those all those workout videos back in the 80s? And I walked into the video store and there was one for pregnant women. And I was like, man, I'm going to have a hard time beating off to this. But I guess you got to get it done.
That's how champions are made.
What are we going to do?
You got to go for it.
You got to go for it.
It's about commitment.
Yeah. So what I was thinking about, so Rob, you like to think in a interesting way. You know, once in a while, I start the show talking about, like, in those sort of quiet moments, you get so caught up in, oh, what'd my wife do, or what'd my kids do, or what I do, or what's going on, or whatever. And then you see that everyone has come before you, is now gone, and you watch these movies. Like, you know, you just watch Darkest Hour, and you go, like, every single person depicted in this movie is dead.
Yeah.
And by the way, they had really important stuff to sort out.
Yeah.
I'm pissed off because my dog ate another one of my kids' socks, and I got to get them to shut their goddamn door because the dog's going to choke on the tube sock. And then you try to put things into perspective, and you do for like 8 seconds, and then you're right back to wherever you are. And it's weird being a human being. I kind of get we need to be wired this way, but it's weird that we're wired like we are the only human beings that were ever born, even though all we do is open a book or turn on the TV and see millions of others that came before us. And, you know, Abe Lincoln, Martin Luther King, you know, they just keep going. Winston Churchill, like, it's, but we still feel.
I know. Well, every culture.
How come we can't get perspective
us? Every culture always thinks themselves as the most modern. Every culture always thinks of themselves as the most up-to-date. Everything the culture thinks of the most advanced. That's one thing for sure. Then when the Spanish came over to the Americas, you know, they were the most advanced culture on the planet was the, you know, was the Aztec, was the Mayans. And these they can tell you when the planets, 5,200-year-old calendar, you know, 5,200-year calendar. So we all think that. And it is relational to what it's like when your little kid, what's upsetting to them is what's in his little world. And that's his whole thing. And as you realize, like when you're not upset and looks absurd now, hopefully the stuff that's bugging you now will look absurd, you know, when you're 80 going back, well, I was bothered by that third wife and losing that home. You know, who cares, you know, which is still bothering me, all those things.
Well, I haven't let the old Tom Shales thing go. And that was, it's been
many
close
moons.
To 20 years now.
You have to ask
now.
Yourself then, what are you getting out of it? If it's still bugging.
Pure entertainment.
Okay,
material.
You are getting something out of it. If you're coming at it from a place of your enjoying the misery, that's different.
Well, the way I'm wired, if you simply wrote a review saying, I like Adam Carolla, I just felt like he wasn't at his best doing the Man Show, but I enjoy him on Loveline or whatever, and I was a little disappointed to find out that this is a show that he wrote, whatever, that would touch a nerve. But when you go, he just looks ugly and we hate Dr. Drew, we hate everything, I then don't care. Then becomes entertainment.
Well, that's
at
what
that
it has
point.
To be like. You got to, you know, the attachment to it is just letting it go. And then that's a gift. That's when I realized, that's what I talk about in Real Rob is at the end of the 8 seasons. Like, it's a gift being rejected by critics. You know, they're freeing you because now I don't have to even think about ever trying to please them because I know they're never going to like anything. And it's like, believe it or not, it's a
what?
Gift.
All right. So back though, just to bring it a little more contemporary stuff. So this thing, so it was a weird thing. So I was sitting around last night and I started reading some tweets and evidently Dinesh D'Souza wrote a tweet, I don't know, or a series of tweets. I don't know what they are, just because I was watching something. But disparaging or something about the school shooting and the kids or the March on Washington or whatever. I'm sure it was his take on you kids don't know anything about gun control,
like,
or whatever.
He was commenting that these kids who just suffered this most horrific thing than any you know, it's something that's like, I can't believe that it's even normalized in society. Have you noticed how like we're kind of colder to this? I'd say that our response to this isn't as horrific as far as it's just absolutely a violent reaction to it as it was Columbine, and like four more kids died this time. So when is it going to take for people to like be absolutely saying this is unacceptable? And they have to make some decisions. And here's what I thought about this thing that happened was, I don't know exactly what he said, but I know that like to even criticize these kids going through this thing is just a bad judgment.
It says AP photo of school shooting survivors watching Florida lawmakers vote down a bill to ban assault weapons.
And they're crying in the picture.
Yeah, they're very upset. And Dinesh D'Souza says, worst news since their parents told them to get summer jobs.
That's just a guy who's clueless.
And I would never go near this subject. It's when people are grieving or whatever, I would never go near it. But I got a whole bunch of tweets going, look what your buddy's up to.
Like, I know, like you're getting dragged into it.
Buddies with Dinesh D'Souza? One of your favorite guests?
here's my idea.
Have I ever spoke about Dinesh, Dana Gould and Rob Schneider, my favorite guests?
Right.
On
that scale, no.
Here's how we can get to the gun owners, okay? Because, like, you know.
I've never spoken to the man outside of this studio, and Mike August books the show. He just books whoever. He gets people from the left. He gets people from the right. Yeah. And they come on. Sometimes I agree. Sometimes I don't. I agree with many things, he says. I don't agree with this. But to call him my buddy or your favorite guest, that's insane.
I know what it is.
And
just,
I don't think the people believe that. Can you believe that?
It's just another way to...
I don't think anyone actually thinks he's your friend.
It's just another way of trying to censor.
Our favorite guest?
No, he's a regular guest.
It's just another way.
He's not a regular. I mean, regular, if once a year's regular, but that's, we have guys on every 3 weeks.
It's just another way of trying to censor and cut off avenues for the guy to make a living or whatever. And not my opinion. It's just another way of attacking him in a... It's like buckshot. Trying to go after that guy. But here's a way I think we go after the gun issue in a way like, hey, okay, let's look at the Second Amendment, specifically what it says, you know, the rights of the citizen should not be infringed of having an armed militia, basically. So I think, okay, if you want to have like a gun, a pistol in your house for some break-ins or whatever, that should, you know, that's up to you. But if you want like a real weapon that they can do multiple,
like military grade,
yeah, then I think you should have like an armory, like everybody else should have an armory, and say, hey, listen, the government's is going to come next week, and then you go get the gun or whatever if you want to go, you know, kill a bear with something with 800 with rounds of ammunition. That's up to you.
That's the sporting way.
But I do think they can have an actual armory. Then, in the community, you can have the guy that you trust. If you need it in an hour, you can go get it. But I do think this.
I like this idea. You know, they have this thing for like, they have like sports car clubs you can sign up for, and they'll have all the cars, and you don't have to own a Ferrari or own a Audi S10 or R8 or whatever it is. You just sign up for your monthly whatever, and then just go out, drive the wheels off it, and then come back.
Restaurant. How about the restaurant that holds your wine for you? You know,
or
your
wine lockers.
The old Cuban cigars. You go, you know what? I need my Cuban cigar, and I need my AR-15. You know, I'm going to go shoot it, and I'll come back.
It always pisses me off when I go to Morton's and I see Jay Leno's locker because I know he doesn't drink wine. And I always, always want to go, give me that. Yeah. Give me that port. That puss don't drink no port. He's toiling in denim somewhere right now.
But the thing is, like, you know, they're focusing on the mental health issue. But it's such an easy thing. Like, we need to help that. And it is true that there is, like, you know, and no reporters will talk about this, and this will be a ton of shit that I'm even saying this now. But, like, there is a consistent thing happening where these shooters, you take somebody who takes antidepressants, and that is one of the side effects is suicidal, or they can become a mass murderer. And that is not talked about because 80% of all media, traditional media, is paid for by the pharmaceutical industry. So why, I mean, if you're going to look at the issue of mental health and avoid the issue of, like, because you know, if you can have mental health or whatever, if the problem, but if you don't have these access to the mass killing weaponry, then it's not going to be a problem. So, but I do think if you're going to open up and talk about mental health, that's got to be talked about. That's got to be part of the discussion.
All right. So my wife was saying, well, go to Twitter and tell them they're not, Dinesh D'Souza is not a friend of yours. And I was like, the person who sent that tweet knows we're not friends.
The people say buddy colloquially. They don't actually mean like your close friend who you text jokes to.
I don't know how they meant it, but he said like your favorite guest and your buddy. And I was like, the person who said that knows that is untrue because if they listen to the show and they never hear me talk about Dinesh D'Souza and they rarely hear him on the show, then they'll have to know that that's incorrect. Talking about it now, so maybe they
got
me.
Go. Got the way.
Real, I have no idea. Like, I don't know. It saddens me, although not to the point where I care. But I always wonder, like, what is? When did we get sort of? When did we become empowered to like talk on behalf of other people who know other people for other people? Like, when do you? I have I don't have a ounce of marrow in any of my bones that says somebody says something I disagree with. Now I'm going to go find somebody else and tell them why they shouldn't have spoke to that person.
Well, Adam, here's the thing about it. It's like you have like a system of communication now where people that are still gathering the ideas in their head while they're gathering it and trying to form an opinion now have an outlet that can go everywhere. Before you used to have to think about it. And then you'd come here and then you'd have to write a letter like we talked about before. And then you'd have to get a stamp and an envelope and leave your You have to spend your own money. And now you can just, the social media is just, they're still gathering this stuff. And it's still a new, relatively new thing, social media, 15 years. That's still pretty darn new. So I think it's just still they're trying to figure it out.
So, Rob, I think we've stumbled onto something here, which is before you send that tweet out. And now, look, you can send Happy Valentine's Day tweets out if you like. But before you send that one with, hey, your best buddy Dinesh D'Souza said this, what do you say about that? You must go to the post office. Don't get in line. I don't want to muck it up.
Right.
Just stand outside for like 100 Mississippi and then walk home again and then hit send.
You still want to send.
I bet somewhere in that walk you've gotten over it.
There is going to be eventually a very advanced filters for this kind of stuff that doesn't exist yet. Just like, you know, before you'd have to call your friend and you go, I'm going to tell that guy, blah, blah, blah. And then you'd have to think on the way there. And now, so I do think eventually there should be some advanced filters where the Twitter is going to figure it out and Instagram, whatever, it's going to go through and go, hey, maybe you should think about this one.
The bit that I never got on to the man show was the phone breathalyzer, like for that, all those bad drunk dialing, whatever this, you know, hey baby, I just miss you so much, you know, like
now you need it for texting and tweeting.
Oh, right, where you really have to blow into your computer. Right,
they have apps that simulate that because it's a problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You have to answer a certain amount of questions that drunk people usually can't wrap their heads around.
Well, that's good
questions.
I like that.
I've tweeted a few times recently and it's it doesn't go well.
Otherwise, you get defenestrated.
Hey, Mark, you've been on hold for a million years. You admire that I don't have a fake laugh.
That's true. Good.
Oh, sure he does.
Hey, man. How's it going? Get it on. Hey, Rob. Great to have you on the show, man. You're a class act. I love hearing you.
Thank you.
And hey, Bald. Hey, Gina. Hey. About a year ago, I run Rycon Service Dogs, and I named a dog after you. You're one of our favorite LA personalities. Just graduated last month, and she's doing an amazing job for her little girl with autism.
Oh, cool, 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 cool.
We named the dog Baldy.
How dare you?
No, we named her Gigi. We were going to name her Rose after Gina's character, but we decided Gigi was better.
Wow, so super fan.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. And Adam, I got a compliment and a question. Yes, you don't have a fake laugh. And when I listen to you, especially with other co-hosts, it becomes really obvious. It's nice. It's endearing. You don't put it on. If you don't find it funny, you just kind of like, you don't fake it. And my question for you is this: have you ever done a rant on the number interrupter? That's when you're calling and you're giving a credit card number or phone number to the person while you're on the line, and you're like 9-1, and they're like 9-1, and they interrupt you before you get through the end of the number. Is that not the most frustrating?
Especially if there's a delay.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
We're never on the same page versus repeat the number versus don't repeat the number.
Right.
You wait for the four groupings, or you wait for the whole thing, or you go rogue.
Right.
Oh, it's are there? Uh huh.
I found that in general people have a weird communication style these days. I run into it a lot.
Well, people's communications are like, you know, are not as good as they were because they don't have to communicate. Yeah. Mm. You know, it's like, I know my friends prefer texting.
Oh, yeah.
Than actually talking. Absolutely.
Feels like most people do.
Yeah,
it's sad that that's appealing. Yet, there's nothing better than going out to lunch with a friend and just talking everyone's ass off, right?
Yep.
Hey, Mark, you provide service dogs for folks that need them?
For children with autism specifically, yes, sir, I do.
That's nice.
We've done 157 as of this weekend. And I tell you, it's an amazing. I know your stance on it, but we're the real deal, and our hearts are.
You gave Gina's dog to a little girl.
I named a dog after Gina because she gave us a shout on Twitter, and the dog is amazing. She's beautiful. She's doing a fantastic job.
For children who have problems communicating, you have a beautiful animal that just gives them that love.
Yeah. What does the dog do for kids with autism?
Oh, it's just like
for kids with autism, they experience something called transition anxiety. We're going place to place, causes them a lot of anxiety. It comforts them. They have, you know, what the biggest the thing that we stress the most that gets overlooked is their peer to peer interaction goes up a lot because kids are, you know, their affections are cheaply bought, so they get the friends to come up meet the dog.
Hey, Mark, hold on. That Dinesh nice. Just sent me a tweet. He said that bitch needs to get a job.
Said dog one, oh, big girl zero.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, Rob, I didn't know you were on the show today, but I'll tell you what a class act Rob is. I don't know if you remember this. A few years back, Rob was on some local show. He was doing a promotion, and he had some trouble getting a parking space. So he was a little late, and he very nicely told the show's host, hey, it'd be nice if you had something for the talent just to kind of help him get in. And they got all indignant, and they excoriated him, but he held his own. Do you remember this, Rob?
No, but it sounds like me getting excoriated. That's pretty much
yeah,
my...
Yeah, no, they tore you apart. They started criticizing your movie, and all you were saying is, hey, man, just have a space where I can park so I can make the show on time.
Hey, Mark, sadly, you've outrageous. Reminded me of something. Rob, you do shows, theaters, clubs all over the country. I do the same thing.
Yeah.
I brought it up on this program a few times. I am amazed at how casual the folks that run the theater are about you being in their theater.
Yeah.
Because I've had it, and tell me if this rings true to you. I've had a million times where the show's at 8, we're playing the theater, there's 1,000 people, it's sold out, and me and Mike August pull up like 8:54, and there's no place to park, and there's no anything, and at some point you're banging on the back door, and the guy's like, yeah, what? And then Mike calls the manager, and he's like, well, I'm not at the theater, where are you? And I'm like... Do you want to take one of your $9 an hour dudes and have him just stand the by yeah. the back door?
That's a tough lesson.
Starting at 7:45 to maybe 8:03.
Look, when I, you know, making
give him some fries.
When I was making movies too, it's like the thing is you have to get over the fact that people that they're just not as into the gig as you are. You know, they're
I
just they're
not.
Making burgers. They're making
it's their it's, theater though, which is
know,
weird, right?
Yeah, but so, when they are, it's, now I'm surprised. People are like, we have this. That have fellow. If you go to Australia, they go, nah, we're all set. We're waiting for hours for you to get up in, eh? Get up there. We got a mic test. And it's like, you know, but here in the States, I think they're just kind of over it. They got a show every night. It's like they're making sandwiches, you know. You have yeah. to not take it personally, but it's tough, you know.
I don't take it personally. What I do is I kind of wonder, like, what are you doing here? Like, the show is supposed to start in 84 yeah. seconds, and I'm waking, like, this is news to you. Like, what? Where are you?
Here's like, well, here's even worse. I was doing a show with Adam Sandler, and like there, and I'm one of the opening guys. Adam Sandler, David Spade, Nick Swartz, and I. It's a fun show, but Adam's the guy that people are there to see. That's why I was instead of like 400 or 1,000 people, there's 5,000 people, you know, and he's gonna come up. So they're testing the mic and the monitors while I'm on stage doing my bit. I was like, are you getting it? Well, I figured it out because it was like, eh! You know, and I heard that.
The
and, like,
broom.
Eh! And it's like, you know, I said, hey, give me the illusion that you give a fuck. You that's know, I'm doing my, and I just like, oh, that's what they're doing. They're testing it. They're getting ready for Adam.
Wildly insulting.
All right. Thanks, Mark and Mike. Just real fast. Mike.
Hey, Adam. Hey, Rob. Me, Gene O'Brien.
50 Chicago.
Yeah, I was listening to The Who, which I know you said is one of your favorite classic rock bands, and I noticed some of their lyrics match up with some of your themes, like number one here, Masturbation, they have a song called Pictures of Lily, and then number two, Atheism, they have a song called Heaven and Hell, and then a song called A Man in a Purple Dress.
Digging deep into The Who's catalog.
Squeeze box.
And then number three, Horrible Parents, the entire Tommy album, yeah, the entire Quadrophenia album, the parents were bad to Tommy. And then
Chris, tell Danny Gould to hold on. We have to name some more obscure Who songs.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Mike. He's been on hold long enough. That's fine.
I know.
And I really like
smugly
The Who.
Preening, Brian.
I like The Who, too.
And Twistle's My Wife is exactly your life, right?
Like my wife, yeah.
Well, you got
there's being chased by a judo expert with a machine gun.
Those are all teenage themes, and that's the audience, and that's the rebelling. So they, you know, if you want people to buy your albums, who goes and buys the albums? It's those 14-year-olds.
Tommy John, that's what you should go out and buy. How about a nice little upgrade in the comfort department with Tommy John? Mind-blowing comfort underwear that never rides up, waistbands that never roll down. No more picking wedgies or rearranging your goods down there. The Tommy John, it is the best product we have. Everyone has it. I'm wearing them now. Everyone here wears them. And the T-shirts, the underwear, the socks that stay up, it's all the best. Plus, they have the undershirts stay tucked in, and they're truly undershirts. They're not the T-shirt that you wear under your shirt. It is a designed shirt to be an undershirt. Socks, pull them up, stay up. I threw away all my garters, all my sock garters.
Really?
All my sock garters.
You sure didn't want to have a few just for emergencies?
No, I threw them all out.
Wow.
Well, I donated them.
Do you feel less sexy now? Because those do it for me.
Yeah, all the good...
We cut to Adam pulling him up his leg in slow motion.
Yeah, I know. I gave them all to you, to John Cleese, like you were talking about. He said he'd worn many of his out. All backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. It's Tommy John. No adjustment needed. Dawson.
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam and get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
All right. Let's see. Rob Schneider, what you should do is go to robschneider.com and find out about dates and shows. Orleans Showroom, again, Chris Kattan. I love Chris Kattan. That is this Saturday on the 24th. And Real Rob, you can check it out on Netflix and binge watch that shit, man. Dana Gould is out there. We'll take a break. We'll do some good sports. We'll be right back with Dana Gould after this.
Saturdays on Corolla Digital. Reasonable Doubt with Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, Reasonable Doubt. Best hour the pod.
Best hour of the week.
I love it.
It's best hour in the pod. I agree. And best hour of the week.
You know why it's the best?
Why?
Because I get to talk to Mark Garagus.
And I get to talk to Adam Carolla. Yeah. And we cover, I mean, there is nothing we don't cover.
Every Saturday, enjoy it.
Also available at podcastone.com and the Podcast One app. Reasonable Doubt every Saturday on Corolla Digital.
Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to Good Sports, presented by Podcast One Sports. Dave Damashek here. Adam Carolla over there. We've done a good job. Three episodes in, two more to go this week, and we've kept our eye right on the winter games, although fascinating, instructional, thought-provoking, and beyond episode yesterday. I encourage you, nay demand, you go back and check it out. What if you transition? We got into some details that apply to sports and then beyond into the game of life. Ace, where we started was you picked Alice Cooper's deep cut, at least to me. I've never heard the song before. Only Women Bleed.
Yes.
Was for your batter's box, or if they got rid of national anthems and let you choose your personal anthem on the podium, you've won a gold medal. That would be your song.
I've got, you know, look, I'll admit, I've been, like many who live in Hollywood, swept up in the whole Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's what's speaking, but that's just what came out of my mouth.
How about Cooper? 40 years ahead of the curve, trailblazing.
I know. And the other guy who's probably not going to be judged is Kindly, who came out as Kindly, which came out of right about the same time. Although, Alice Cooper. So 75 was that song. The thing that's always crazy is I'm always in a room of people who've never heard of these songs I'm talking about, but when you go back and look it up, it was a top five song, or even top number one, or whatever.
It was number one in Canada. It was number 12 was its peak in America.
All right, so you always do what I do. Number one, number 12, meet in the middle, number six.
Yeah.
All right, our top 20 then, but number one in Canada. Okay, the song that's not going to hold up quite as nicely is Ted Nugent's Stranglehold. Which is
but think about what would
I wouldn't mind if that. Now that's got a good riff, and that would sound good as you are entering the batter's box. Gary Oldfine, Ted Nugent, Strangle, which also is probably from about 1975, 76, in there. This playing entered the batter's box. Turn it up a little. Me walking out there, doing that move.
Right. Do not break your stare. Lock eyes with the pitcher and keep them locked.
Yeah.
You ready for this, friend?
Right.
I don't think you are. You can take the next 20 years. You ain't going to be
this
ready.
This is 75? All right. Now, whatever goodwill Alice Cooper earned with Only Women Bleed was undone very quickly by this song, because listen to the lyrics. Coming like a dog in heat. They don't ask.
What? I've never listened to the lyrics. That's not the Ted Nugent I know.
There's a line in here where he goes, "You had me down. You put me in my place. Now I got you in a stranglehold, baby. I'm gonna smash your face."
What the hell?
Get those lyrics, Garrett.
I've got them here.
All right,
this is a confession.
Wait, he may say it here. Let's listen. "You left me. Put me in my place. Got you in a stranglehold, baby. You gotta crush your face?
You're gone. I crushed your face."
What the hell?
All right. That outdid, in the same year, a lot of range. You can turn it down. 1975 is a lot of range.
That night, what kind of song is this?
"That night you left me, you put me in my place, and I got you in a stranglehold, baby, and I crushed your face."
Wow. Ted Nugent is consistent. See, he doesn't have the range of Alice Cooper, apparently. What kind of confession song is that? The authorities, I hope, arrived at his door by nightfall upon the release of that track. Yeah, I think it would...
That'd be a good karaoke. You know, it'd be kind of fun. It'd be fun if the Me Too movement had like a karaoke night and you showed up and you're like, "Stranglehold." I bet everyone would be going nuts at the beginning when they did all this stuff.
What do they call those things that are in vogue now? The group baby showers, the multi-sex.
Co-ed.
Co-ed. Woohoo! I don't want to go crazy, but it's loco that somebody signed off on this, and now, I unbeknownst to me, this is the prevailing way now. Like, oh yeah, no, now the guys go too. Don't look at. Are you doing that, Donovan?
I've been a few of them, and co-ed. A few of them. And co-ed bridal showers.
No,
they have those too.
No. Next, the bachelor party.
Yeah.
What year?
That's the one you got to dig your heels in, fellas. Don't allow that.
That was 75. What did that do on the charts? Now, you know that song. You just didn't know what it was about.
I had no idea. I know it from Dazed and Confused, is what I think primarily.
He's got her in a stranglehold, and he's going to crush her
Johnny,
face.
To be fair, Johnny Cash talks in multiple songs about shooting a guy. One time for pleasure, and he winds up in the clink. Guns N' Roses sang a song about burying a girlfriend in his backyard, but... Somehow this is worse than either one. This
stranglehold
is graphic and grotesque.
Well, he's saying you left me.
Yeah.
Well, you thought you got me, but now I got you in a stranglehold. I'm going to crush your face.
I win in the end. Yeah. Signed, Ted Nugent.
Mm-hmm.
I would be fascinated to hear what songs, if you put that in, hey, if you win a medal, Olympian, what song do you want there? It's your anthem, if you will. What song? I mean, I can't imagine what the range of music people would come up with. I've always said that James Blunt song, specific for the batter's box, would spook the pitcher in a different way. Not intimidate him, but if I did like...
"You're beautiful.
I saw you with another man." And you just like, oh, hold up, ump. You just step out of the batter's box and you lock eyes with that pitcher.
Yeah.
And you start, "I saw you with another man. You're beautiful." Like, if you start doing that, you start lip-syncing it at the pitcher, he'd be freaked out. He'd just plunk you. Take your base. "Hey, I took one for the team. Look, I'm on first base now." You know?
I met James Blunt at a party. Very delightful, diminutive man.
I'd like to hear his cover of that Nugent song we just heard.
And I asked him about his past or something. Like, he was in the British military, and I think he drove a tank, or he was a scout for a tank. And I just went, You want to talk about range?
There you go.
Once again, Alice Cooper had some range, but James Blunt, look up James Blunt. I'm telling you, he was in.
But do we count
British military?
Do we count British military as actual military?
Yeah, had to deal with the Falklands, and yeah,
we're here. Like, don't mess with the Queen, or we'll get you. And we can stand there all day without making an expression, no matter what you do. But that's the extent of our military prowess.
I think he was a scout, like for artillery, and he was an artillery scout. And he drove a tank, or was an artillery scout, and like maybe it was in the Falklands conflict or something. All right, go. What was it, Gary? Hold on. You brush up on James Blunt. And by the way, you should have seen this coming. You should have already been to his page.
You're very right.
You got to know. Like, you got to feel it.
I apologize.
You know, like when the guys play Ultimate Frisbee?
Yeah.
And they play together for a long time, and the guy does a pump, and he comes up, and then he goes deep. You should have that same instinct with me. Like, you should
Marino
have known.
Marino didn't wait for Mark Duper to come out of his break. The ball was
there. You should have known.
Duper turned around. Oh, ball. Catch
you should have known it was a long time since we talked about James Blunt and that we were due.
Come on, Gary Duper.
Come on, man.
Yeah, that's
Gary Duper. BetDSI, I'll tell you about that. Ah, it's that time of year again. March Madness. The BetDSI $1 million Bracket Challenge is right around the corner. While we wait, you can still win big this NCAA basketball season. Conference tournaments begin next week, so each game is crucial. BetDSI, the best online sports book in 20-plus years. Top-rated on review sites. Easy to use. Built their reputation on fast payment of winnings and great customer service. Available 24/7, 365. Live in-game wagering. I love that. So fun to bet. Like, the first half didn't go how you thought it was going to go. Well, do a little betting in the second half. You can do it throughout the tournament, the in-game wagering. Make plays throughout the entire games and events, whatever. It is BetDSI. Gary.
Register now and you'll get 200% member bonus by using the promo code GOODMADNESS. And tune in during the next few weeks to learn more about BetDSI's $1 million Bracket Challenge. Don't sit on the sidelines this March Madness. Use promo code GOODMADNESS and start winning today.
Now, Gary, quickly, what about Blunt?
Quickly is going to be tough, but he started out in something called the Life Guards, which was part of the cavalry.
Heard of those.
Cavalry regiment. His training for the he started training at the Royal Military Academy, and then was later trained further in Alberta, Canada. And then he voluntarily decided to join up with something called the Blues and Royals and go with NATO to the Kosovo conflict.
Was he a tank guy?
He did have a tank as well.
He's beautiful.
In Kosovo. Wow.
He strapped his guitar to the outside of the tank and would perform for the troops from time to time. And it looks like his unit was doing some pretty serious, you know, like combat with Serb rebels stuff.
Man's got range.
You're right. I hope he was just playing for the friendlies. That would go to another level, though, if he takes his guitar out and makes peace with his music.
Yeah.
We don't need to throw bullets around. I'm going to throw some notes your way, friend. We're all friends.
El Kabong. Use it like a weapon.
Or that's where we go back to his acoustic version of the Ted Nugent song, and he sings that to the troops, and they run scared.
Yep.
Yeah. I got you in a headlock. You know, they're out of there, the Kosovo people. All right. That's it for this episode of Good Sports presented by Podcast One Sports. For Adam Carolla, Dave Damashek. Out.